Having three boys, the hardest thing as a parent for me was when they came to me and said, look what he did. And I have to be the referee and decide where the guilt is.
I love my kids, but they drive me crazy.
Yeah, what really frustrates me is when my daughter kind of does her homework assignments by memory rather than looking at her notes to see exactly what's supposed to be done. That drives me nuts.
Oh. Well, kids don't do things the way we want them to do them. And maybe you can relate to those comments. As a mom or a dad, you may feel like you've got everything under control most days, but every now and then, something unexpected happens, and then nothing goes right with the kids. If that's been your experience, we have a great, encouraging Focus on the Family broadcast for you today. Your host is Focus president and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
I'm laughing, John, because that sense of frustration and wondering, what do we do now, is something that my wife Jean and I have experienced many times with our own boys. So nobody is perfect in this, and I'm sure you and Dina have dealt with that
all the time, yeah.
If we're honest, parenting often surprises us. It's a lot harder than we expected. It doesn't always go according to the manual. That's if you have a manual. Maybe you've let things coast a bit or thought you could raise your kids kind of on autopilot. I'm generally guilty of that. I think, well, you know, everything will move ahead normally, and we just, you know, order our affairs in a good way, a Christian way, and things will work out, but it takes effort. But life as a family doesn't always work that way, and neither does a cookie-cutter approach. There's no formula that A plus B is going to give you C. Instead, we need a plan and some intentionality with our children. We have to pray for them and get to know who they are and what they are on the inside, and then apply a biblical approach to help them grow.
Yeah, and you're going to hear all sorts of great advice today. We should mention that our broadcast today is primarily for healthier families, where there aren't super serious conflicts or issues in the home.
Yeah, that's right, John. We have other broadcasts that deal with divorce or abuse or what to do with a prodigal child, and I'm hopeful those tools are worthy of consideration if you're in that spot. Plus, we have counselors here if you need their help. Those kinds of problems need greater attention, and I want to encourage you to contact us here at Focus on the Family if you're dealing with a crisis like that. But today's program is about common challenges that we parents face, and we're going to feature the practical wisdom of some great friends to the ministry, Bill and Pam Farrell. They always have wonderful insights to share. They're great people to just hang out with, and I think you'll hear that in their responses and our conversation. Whether it's about marriage or parenting or family life in general, they have some sound advice.
Yeah, and the Farrells have been guests on this broadcast many times before. In fact, they were here just a few weeks ago talking about romance in marriage. Today, we're going to turn to their book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. And we'll start with some opening remarks from Bill and Pam.
Now, we can't take all of the credit if our kids turn out well, and we also can't take all of the blame. You know, even God had, you know, he was perfect. He's the perfect parent. But even it took one generation for people to start rebelling against a great God. And so it's us doing the best we can to try to be loving like God.
The picture I like to give parents is I think parenting is a lot like feeding of the 5,000.
Yes, it is.
You know, Jesus is talking to this crowd. There's 5,000 men. The implication is their families are there too. So it's probably more like 12 or 15,000 people. Jesus looks at the guys and says, you feed them. And they went and got all the resources they could find. And they came back to Jesus with the equivalent of two lunches.
Yeah.
And said, Jesus, here's what we have. And Jesus said, I can work with that. And parenting is us making sure that we bring bread and loaves that are good. Because Jesus doesn't want moldy bread. He doesn't want stale fish. He wants the best we can bring. But our part is still the small contribution. The biggest contribution to parenting is begging God for the hearts of our kids. Because if our kids give their hearts to Jesus, we're going to look like good parents.
And connecting those dots. They can say it, but they have to live it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's quickly just go through the list of 10, and then we're going to dig into a few. But, you know, we got to give people some hope here. And I'd like to just jump in and just reference the 10 quickly, and people will identify. And we'll put these up on the website.
Sure.
And,
exactly. So decide to be proactive. You know, decide that you're going to make some decisions as a parent. Decide to be consistent. Have some integrity yourself. Decide that character counts. Decide to have a plan. Sit down together and create a plan. Decide to be creative. Sometimes you have to think outside the box. Your kids are not all cookie
cutters. Kids don't fit formulas.
Yeah. Decide to be a student of your child. Every child's unique. Decide to partner with God. And we've already talked a little bit about that. Decide to build a network. It's the one time I do believe that it does take more than a village. It takes a church. It takes a community. It takes a lot of us.
Yeah, you don't want everybody in the village helping your kid.
Right. Like when your kid comes home and says, do you know what Jim said today? And it's what you've been telling your kid for 10 years.
That's a good thing.
Rejoice in that instead of saying, yeah, that's what I've been trying to tell you for 10 years.
Yeah.
Just be glad somebody echoed the truth. Mm.
And then decide to trust, train. And then trust your kids. That's the teen year chapter.
Because when you say to your kids, I'm trusting you to do the right thing, rather than don't mess up, it changes the mindset of your kids.
Okay, John just gave the I am guilty look.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You can parent by faith or fear. I choose to parent by faith.
It's a good reminder.
Then the last is to decide to celebrate. You know, we like to say put traditions and memories, put your trademark. Traditions and memories on your kids. So celebrate all along the path.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the birth of your son, Brock. I think he came into the world. You guys are probably formulating these things. You're a Christian couple. Although, Pam, you did not come from a Christian home.
Neither of us did.
Oh, you didn't either. So I identify with that. Neither did I. But what happened when in your fairy book story, all of a sudden your firstborn comes along?
Well, Bill was a youth pastor. And
even better. Well qualified.
Yeah.
So he was a youth pastor, and I was sitting holding Brock, and I remember praying, Lord, it seems like some kids seem to soar and succeed, and some seem to stumble and fall by the time they're 18. What's the difference? What makes some kids be able to soar and some stumble? So I started praying there in my quiet time and thinking of the healthy families. And so I wrote down all the traits and skills and leadership qualities that were in the healthy kids. And I showed it to Bill when he came home. And the list is in 10 Best Decisions a Parent Can Make. It's like 100 things long. That day, I was very overwhelmed. And I'm like, look at all this stuff.
Which isn't that how a lot of us feel as parents?
Oh,
we're
yeah.
We're just overwhelmed. We look at all that needs to be done in this kid's lives, and we just, like, how am I ever going to get it done? Why did God trust me with this? It's impossible. And as I looked at the list, it suddenly occurred to me there were actually categories.
They kind of grouped together.
Yeah, that the first thing we wanted for our kids is we wanted them to be learners. Mm-hmm. Like, in this highly informational age, mm-hmm. if our kids don't learn, they're going to fall behind really quickly. So they had to have this aggressive sense that I'm going to learn something new every week of my life.
And that jumps into one of the next chapters. That would be the student of your child, because every child's motivated uniquely. And so you have to know how God wired that child.
Well, and I've come to the conclusion that kids are naturally motivated, but they tend to be overwhelmed by their strengths when they're young. So let me use our middle son as an example. Our middle son is really gifted with people. And when he was young, people were overwhelming to him. They were so important to him, and he picked up on so many clues from them that he was mean to them to drive them away. So it looked like he didn't like people. And what we had to discover is that if we want to motivate this kid, we have to invite friends along. Whatever he does,
all about people.
We have to bring friends along, even though it looks like he doesn't like people.
Huh.
And so one of the clues to figuring out how to motivate your kids is the thing that they're stressed about, the thing that they're irritating in, is probably a strength that's underdeveloped, and they don't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Like our oldest son, Brock, he was just made for leadership. Like some of those kids, God just drops them in the world, and you realize this kid has to lead or he won't know his place in life. Well, when he was young, he would boss everybody around.
You're going up the slide the wrong way. You shouldn't be smoking. That will kill you. He's like two, you know, bossing the world around. We need to channel this energy. Yeah.
And teaching him that you don't have to address everything you see in life was a tough challenge for him. And it was easy to demotivate him. Hey, you can't say that. Okay, fine, I won't say anything. And so motivating kids, you have to tap into that overwhelmed sense that they have, and then you have to learn to speak their language, which, again, is not an easy thing to figure out. But once you get it, you can tap into it, and pretty much every kid can be motivated. It's just not easy to see how.
How do you start that conversation, though? I mean, this is really helpful. I don't know about you, John. Are you running through your mind about
– making mental notes and some written notes as well.
So, you know, if you've got some behavior issues, let's say there's – I mean, the common one is not listening to the parent. I mean, how often do we get calls and letters here saying, I can't get my 8-year-old or my 13-year-old to do what I asked them to do? Can you provide me any help? How would you answer that? How do you motivate a child to do the right thing?
Sometimes my friend Kendra Smiley, she says, be the parent. So sometimes it's an attitude adjustment on our part that we need to say, okay, my kid's not going to rule the house here. God's placed me in authority, and I need to help them learn how to obey God, because God will bless them as they learn how to obey God. But they have to first learn how to obey me. So sometimes it's an attitude on our part. And, you know, if you grew up in a house like Bill and I, where my parents were not believers, so a lot of yelling and screaming, I knew that that was not really effective at motivating people. It either shuts them down or makes them angry. And so that's not what I want in my kids' life. So God said, well, what's the opposite of yelling and screaming? Was whispering. Wasn't that what the Holy Spirit does? He whispers to our heart. And so when I really wanted my kids' attention, instead of yelling and screaming, I would get down on their level and I would hold their little face in my hands and I would whisper what I needed them to do, and then make them repeat it back to me to make sure that they understood it, and then move forward.
How'd that work at 16 and 17?
I was just going to ask
actually,
that.
The key is, if you do it when they're young, when you do it when they're young, it's less likely you'll have to yell and scream when they're older. Now, in the same way, and when I had teenagers, yelling and screaming didn't motivate them either. But following through on some consequences did get their attention.
Well, and the key there is following through.
Exactly. Right.
And Gene and I have this debate quite often. Gene's really good at follow through. Sometimes I'm not as good. So what am I risking there when I, okay, you know what, you're showing some repentance, go ahead and go back to what you were doing. Am I teaching them something not so healthy?
Exactly. It just depends on, yeah, that's where the partnering with God decision makes all the difference in the world. God will tell us whether this is a moment of grace, a moment of mercy, or a moment of follow through, and you have got to learn this lesson. We're going to clear the schedule, and we're going to follow through to make sure you understand, because this kind of behavior is going to ruin your life if I don't address it. And the Holy Spirit will teach us.
And what I would add to this, Jim, is for parents who are having trouble getting their kids to do the things they know are best for the kid, experiment with different approaches. Because it's possible that the approach you're taking worked with one of your kids, and now you're just trying to use it with more intensity on this child.
Right.
And it may be that a different approach is important. For instance, our youngest son, he would go through these bouts of just real stubbornness. He wasn't belligerent. He wouldn't look us in the eyes and be defiant. He would just be stubborn.
He's like, he won Christian Character Award every year for 12 years growing up. So he's a good, nice kid. But the boy can be stubborn.
And he's motivated by the we. Like, oh, let's do this together. And so when he didn't have enough time with us, he would become stubborn.
So sometimes it's a change on our part.
And we could push all we want. We could set up consequences all we want. But what we finally discovered is that if I said to him, hey, why don't we work on this together? Suddenly things turn.
He'd blossom.
Yeah. And so often it's us looking for, I'm going to try something new and see if it works better, and just keep trying stuff till you find it. And some of the kids out there, they're moving targets. Like one of our kids, what worked today didn't work a month from now. And so we were constantly praying for wisdom. Like, God, show us what'll work with this kid, because what I tried last month that was really effective isn't working now.
And like, the hub of the student of your kid chapter is kind of like five different tools that can help you really understand your child, whether it's what's their learning style. Some kids learn better auditory. Some learn better reading. Some learn better doing. So know how your kid learns. Know their motivation style. There's four basic ways to be motivated in life, whether it's by people, by things.
Is the one in there, do it because I told you to do it? Is that one of the four?
That's not one of the four. No,
that one doesn't work so well, does it? But we all try it, don't we?
We've all
it's
tried
like
it.
Parenting 101.
And now they're your kids' spiritual gifts. And so there's a list of the spiritual gifts. And so there's basically just a lot of tools and checklists that you can, you know, go through and say, yep, that is my kid. One, that is my kid number two. This is my kid number three. And so I can structure my parenting now that I have the information in front of me.
You mentioned the 13-year-old twice.
Well, so it's hypothetical.
It's a friend of a 13-year-old. Yeah. So let me talk about the 13-year-old.
Okay.
Because it really is a different world. Once those kids hit puberty,
yeah,
it is a
different
world. They smell different. They think different. And early on in puberty, like things go very emotional.
Yeah.
Because the body
Boys
and girls. Because the body's developing at this rapid rate. And there's so much coming alive in the kid's life that they have a hard time reasoning their way through things. And as parents, we want to reason with them. You know, we want them to get up, because if you don't go to school, you're not going to get an education. If you don't get an education, you're not going to have an effective career. If you don't have an effective career, your family's not going to. And we just run that. Well, they're not there. They just are worried about how they feel today.
Mm-hmm.
And so the general rule with a 13-year-old is we have to shift decision-making responsibility from the parent to the kid. And so we start asking that 13-year-old, hey, I notice you're not wanting to get up for school. Like, what do I as a parent who loves you need to do to get you out of bed? And then wait for the answer. And when they get hesitant on you and they absolutely won't cooperate, assuming, again, there's no depression like you talked about, we're talking about a normal, you know, active 13-year-old, then we say something like, well, listen, I know you're smart enough to figure this out, but you're holding back on me, so I'm going to have to put you on restriction from everything.
So anything that plugs in, it's mine.
Until you come up with a better plan. So that means you can't have a phone. You there's no computer use. There's no time with friends. There's no
TV.
There's nothing.
Okay, we did that, and it went for like 4 months.
Sure. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was
good.
That's
impressive. That's the longest I've heard that.
That was a good one.
You're raising a leader there.
Well.
But see, the key is we're trying to get them to buy in.
Yeah.
And as parents, we tend to be impatient with the process. And again, this is their full-time job. Figuring out how to resist your parenting efforts is what they do for a living.
Right. In the book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make, you talk about this concept of the boys are people of the ladder and girls are people of the circle. Mm-hmm. That really intrigued me. What did you mean by that?
That's our kid version of Men Are Like Waffles and Like Spaghetti, you know, bestseller there. What that means is that guys are the people of the ladder. I raised three boys. If you've ever driven three boys home from football practice, I wouldn't need to explain, because what happens is I lifted 110 today. Oh, that's nothing. I bench pressed 150. Oh, that's nothing. Mine was like 250. That's nothing. My cousin, he can do 300. That's nothing. My uncle, he wrestles for the WWF. I mean, it's just like one.
So the ladder's
up.
Just one
totally.
Up in the whole
He's
time.
He's the alpha male.
That
like,
is a guy
room.
Thing.
That is a guy thing.
And as men, we need to know where we fit in the pecking order.
Why does that help us?
Well, I think as men, we're success driven.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is
performance driven, for sure.
Yeah, it was, we only want to do the things we know we're really good at. Mm-hmm. So we have to figure out what we're really good at, which means also finding out what we're not so good at. And so there's a whole process of finding it out. And we tend to kind of define our security level based on accomplishment.
Ah.
So that's why, when pastors get together, what's the first question they ask each other? So how big's your church?
Right.
It isn't necessarily that we're battling our egos. We just want to know, okay, where do we all fit in the discussion? And once we line out the order, we get after business and we get running.
That's why when I play golf, that's actually a Christian act of humility.
Yeah.
You're helping
I play it, but I can't. At the end of a game of golf with guys, there is a strong pecking order.
Yes, there is.
And I'm always the fourth guy.
Yeah, that's your ministry. You're helping those guys feel
ministry.
Good.
There we go.
Like there's a very famous study done with a trampoline.
Yeah.
Where researchers put girls in with the trampoline, no instruction, just threw the girls in and
what
there's a trampoline.
What will they do? And the girls immediately set up a social system. One little girl was the timekeeper. She made sure everybody got the same amount of jumps so that nobody's feelings got hurt. Then they brought the boys in.
And all the boys jumped up on the trampoline at the same time, started jumping up and down, pushing each other off. And the last guy on the trampoline got the longest turn.
And you know what? When you get married, that kind of doesn't change, does it?
So we are relational. Girls are relational by nature. And
that's the circle concept.
That's the circle concept.
In fact, it was interesting. This is one of those statements that Pam made that has just stuck with me. We were writing a book on how do you talk to your kids about their sexual development. And I said to Pam, okay, I'm going to put in here, I'm going to say to the boys, we need to teach the boys to view their sexuality like a really powerful sports car, that it's got great value in their life, it's got great potential in their life, and if they respect the power, it's going to work well for them. If they don't respect the power, it's going to create damage because that's what power does. I said, so what's the equivalent with the girls? And she said to me, well, that would be relationships. That to females, relationships are like jet fuel. Mm-hmm. And I went, wow.
You know, that is so well said, Bill. And, you know, understanding that complementary nature of gender and how we benefit each other, what we learn and how we learn it and how we behave is really important. Talk about the importance of character. That's one of the 10 that you mentioned, Pam, earlier, right at the top of the program. And if you didn't hear that list, we'll post it on the website, mm-hmm. John.
Right.
Character is a big one. And again, when you're looking at kids about age, 9 to 13, they're starting to show their independence. That character is becoming more obvious. Some parents are going, uh-oh. Others are going, okay, we're in a good place. Talk to the uh-oh parent. We're not seeing the character. Maybe there's some lying or deceit going on. How do they engage that productively?
You know, that your parenting needs to change as your kids hit the teen year. There's one question you need to become really great at, and that is, tell me why I should say yes. You want to roll that question back to your kid's life to help them think through and own their own life.
So convince me to say yes.
Yes. And so if it's not immoral or illegal, I'm going to say yes. But I'm going to make you be the advocate, the lawyer of your life. For example, let's say one of your kids wants, can I go to the beach? Can I go to prom? Can I, you know, go shopping with a friend? Can I, whatever. Instead of saying yes or no and you just being like benevolent.
The decision maker.
Right? You want to roll the ball back into their court. You're working yourself out of a job. Let's give an example from our son Zach's life. Certain movies, you know, we have a standard at our house that we character counts. We want garbage in, garbage out. So let's keep some good stuff in. He comes to us and he says,
"Well," and the background is, again, he's very social and he's involved with a cheerleading team, which again ramps up the social network
right.
even higher. And he comes home and he says, "Hey, Dad, the team wants to go to a movie tomorrow night. I want to know if I can go."
Yeah, right.
So I said, "Well, Zach, what do you think as a dad that loves you more than you can imagine? Like, what do you think I would want to know about this decision?" Oh.
Like, maybe the name of the movie and like what its rating.
I said, "Yeah, I'd probably want to know that." I said, "So what is it?" He said, "Well, it's not just another teen movie," which I don't know about your parenting instincts, but like that's one of the movies that I don't
no!
do not want my adolescent son to get exposed
to. Sounds
like
to. It reinforced the wrong
exactly.
kind of
exactly. I said, "Well, what do you know about that movie?" I think it's rated PG-13.
You think or you know?
And he's like, and he just hesitated on me.
Right.
And I said, "Listen, Zach, based on what you've told me so far, I can't say yes. If you would like to do more research on that and come back to me, I'm open for that discussion."
So just go to Plugged In.
That's exactly what we tell our kids. So he goes and he does
Kids
research.
Hate Plugged In.
He comes back and he's like, "All right, yeah, it's not really a feral movie. So I'll tell my friends, let's go to this other movie, which did have a good rating. And if they won't go along with me, I guess I'll just come home."
And I said, "Well, Zach, I could support that decision."
So he goes to his friends.
And his friends, of course, ignored him. So Zach came home on Saturday night, totally miserable.
"I'm such a loser. All my friends are out and I'm home with my parents."
And made sure he shared his misery with the rest of us, which we let him do because, again, he's struggling through this decision.
So you didn't say, "Hey, come on, straighten up."
No, we just let
him.
You
didn't send him away. You suffered.
We let him go through it and we joined him in the process because this is hard.
Yep.
It's a hard step. Like, as adults, we treat it like it's just a movie. Like, get over it.
It's a big social step for him to stand up for his moral convictions. Well, the next day, he goes to practice, and his friends are like, that was the stupidest movie. We walked out, Zach. It was like we just like threw away $10. We should have listened to you.
Hmm. And so then he felt better.
Exactly. And from that point on, he became the moral leader of his peer group.
Oh, man. That's where it works out well.
And God doesn't always work that quickly. I mean, he did that time. But the principle is when you put decision-making in your kids' hands, it's hard to watch because they're inefficient with it. They're often clunky with it. But when they go through the process, it helps them build character rather than just react to your decisions.
So tell me why I should say yes.
Some great principles for raising children, and we hope you've found this conversation with Bill and Pam Farrell helpful for your journey as a mom or a dad. Now, we have some great resources for you at Focus on the Family. More practical advice and encouragement from the Farrells in their book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. And we can get a copy of that to you, along with a CD or download of this program, including our conversation tomorrow when you stop by focusonthefamily.com/radio or call for details, 800, the letter A and the word family. By the way, at the website, we have a free parenting assessment for you to take. It's really easy, and it's going to give you some terrific insights about how you're doing in your role as a mom or a dad, those strengths that you're bringing to the family, and maybe one or two things you can work on as well.
Hey, everybody. These are just a few of the tools we have for moms and dads, because Focus is here to help you improve and strengthen the relationships in your home, which I know is important to you. The last time we aired this broadcast with the Farrells, we received this comment from a woman named Amy. She said, "Thank you for the prayers, spiritual support systems, and many resources that Focus on the Family provides. I listen to your programs weekly, sometimes daily. They are always insightful, helpful, and inspirational. You've touched several generations of my family. My parents read your books and listened when your radio program first aired, and now, as a mother and wife, I find Focus working miracles in my life." Well, let me say thank you, Amy, for that vote of encouragement and confidence. We can only thank the Lord for what He's helped us accomplish in the lives of so many families around the world. This is to His credit and to His glory. Let me also say thank you to our friends who have supported Focus in the past, who are supporting Focus currently. Your generosity makes this program possible and pays for the resources that we provide to families who need them, like Amy's. Also, I need to remind you, too, that right now we have a special match going on where any donation you make today will be doubled. So if you can help us out financially, we'd really appreciate it, and your gift will be doubled.
And you can make that contribution at focusonthefamily.com/radio or when you call 800-A-FAMILY, 800-232-6459. When you do that, we'll send a complimentary copy of the Farrell's book, The 10 Best Decisions Every Parent Can Make. That's our way of saying thank you for partnering with us to equip and empower parents today. Coming up, you'll hear more from the Farrells about being intentional in raising your children.
We do want to have a plan, but we want to simplify it. One of the mistakes we see parents make is they get too complicated with their approach to parenting. It overwhelms them, and it certainly overwhelms their kids, because kids are pretty simple in the way they approach life.
That's next time on Focus on the Family. And remember, when you get in touch, let us know how you're listening on our website, through our mobile app, or on our podcast feed. I'm John Fuller, and on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, join us next time as we help you and your family thrive.
Heather Ann felt overwhelmed with two children under the age of two, but she knew where to turn for help.
The Focus on the Family counselor was very helpful in that they gave me some specific practical tips to do, you know, for Katie being a toddler. I didn't feel alone in my struggle anymore.
I'm Jim Daly. Together we can bring real hope to moms like Heather Ann. Give today and your donation will be doubled. Call 800-A-FAMILY.